part of me wants to immediately share with you the voice of Dr. Higginbotham, but I think before doing that, I want to introduce you to the people who helped to bring his voice forward to you, and it's a great pleasure. We have Rachel Joristy, I hope I've got that correct, and Amanda McCaslin. I had a feeling it was McCaslin. And Nathan Lawyer here this morning, and we're going to welcome each of you. They're all students at Cornell High School, that little school that does big things out in the Coriopolis area. I'll start with you, Nathan. Good morning.
Good morning.
And tell me a little bit about how you all approached this and I guess why you're here and what you did.
So a couple weeks ago, we went to the Edgeworth Club where they were holding a celebration for the opening of the Tuskegee Airmen Memorial at the Swickley Cemetery. And we went and we met Rich, and he said, he showed us to this room and he said, I'll send Dr. Higginbotham over to you. And then from there, we sat down and talked to him, and he was just so insightful, and it was really just eye-opening.
Yeah, and I really want to thank you all for doing it. And Rich Dieter, who's been heading up the efforts for the memorial, has done such a great job in bringing it together. And he and I were talking, and I said, I'm sorry that we can't be there. This was a few weeks prior. We just don't have anybody we can send Friday night. And Rich said, what about all those youth reporters you keep telling me about? Aren't any of them available? And I kind of said, duh. And I called Nathan right away because of the fine work he did covering One Young World and also covering other events. And I feel like I know Nathan very well. You're a senior this year. And let's meet the other two people who are here with you. I'll start with you, Amanda. Amanda McCaslin is here. What year are you in now?
I'm in 10th grade.
And can you tell me just a bit about yourself? You play softball, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I see a jersey.
Yeah, I play softball. I'm in the band. And I'm also part of the Pittsburgh Youth Reporters.
Excellent. And what instrument do you play?
I play the alto saxophone.
Excellent. And were you in our boot camp?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, it's all coming back to me. That boot camp ends up being a blur for me. And Nathan, you remember our Pittsburgh Youth Media boot camp. And, you know, that was just, last week?
Yeah,
no,
it was
week
last
before
week
last on Friday. And I'm happy that you're here. What surprised you about getting a chance to talk to a Tuskegee Airman? This gentleman, I believe, is 87 years of age.
I just like hearing all the stories that he had to tell about when he was in service. It was so amazing because you can listen to him for like hours on end just telling the stories that he's witnessed. And it's just amazing.
Yeah, I should mention too, by the way, Reach Babanis. Mr. Bobanis is the man who has spent, I don't know if you had a chance to meet Mr. Bobanis. He is not an airman himself, but he has spent just hours and hours, hundreds of hours, documenting the southwestern Pennsylvania story with Tuskegee Airmen. And if you watch a video done by Chris Moore from WQED, you'll see a lot about Regis and the work he's done. The fact is that our area, southwestern PA, has more airmen, and a few women, I might add, from the Tuskegee Airmen era than any other region in the country, which is why this memorial was brought about. Let me turn to you, Rachel, so you can say hello to everybody and tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Rachel, and I'm a sophomore at Cornell, and I participate in cheer, volleyball, and track, and I'm in marching band and play a couple different instruments.
What do you play?
For marching band, I play the trumpet, but I also play the guitar and the piano and bass, and I dabble a little bit in the banjo and mandolin. So.
Wow. You're probably liking some of this music. Do you like bluegrass or folk?
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm glad you're here. You can take the torch. When I get maybe I usually take a nap around 10 o'clock. tell me your reactions to actually doing this. What was the scene like? Forgetting about talking to Dr. Higginbottom, but what did it look like there?
Oh, it was really cool. It was fancier than I thought it was going to be, and it was just really cool, and talking to him was really neat, and it's like you learn about these things in history class, and then you go in, and you're talking to somebody who's actually lived through it. This person is a piece of history, and it's really neat to make that connection.
Let's take a listen we'll listen to him in a minute, just in a couple seconds. You were able to record about 10 minutes from him, and we're going to play a little bit of him this morning. Did you know much about the Tuskegee Airmen prior to this exhibit? Was it something covered in history class?
So last year we covered World War II in history class, and I had heard about the Tuskegee Airmen, but we never actually learned about them. And I remember asking if we could, and they said, we actually had a student teacher at the time, and he said, yeah, we'll probably get to it, and we never did. So I actually took it upon myself to do a little bit more research on my own. And that was kind of the only background I had on the Tuskegee Airmen.
Wow. And, you know, first of all, I did not care for history too much at all, frankly. And I love history now, but in high school I didn't like it at all. And I think it's because it was mostly memorization of dates and it was taught a little differently then. But I'm surprised. I mean, the story of the Tuskegee Airmen is a pretty significant part of our history in terms of civil rights and really equity of people. And have you seen the movie Red Tail, the Cuba Gooding movie? I haven't seen it yet, but it's a movie that portrays the Tuskegee Airmen. There's a lot of computer-generated graphics in it. I've seen a little bits and pieces of it. But rather than getting it from a movie, a number of these folks are still living, or their family members are living, and they have firsthand stories to tell. Let's hear a little bit now. This is Dr. Higginbottom and a little bit of what he had to say.
My name is Robert McCoy Higginbotham, MD, orthopedic surgeon, original Tuskegee Airman. Retired. I'm from Rancho Mirage, California. I was born Swickley, Pennsylvania, Swickley Hospital, April 2nd, 1926. I enlisted in the military in April of 1944, and I started my service in the military in July of 1944. I enlisted to learn how to fly and fight for my country. My first accountable place for my enlistment was based right outside of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, following which, after receiving my uniform, shoes, and other paraphernalia, we were placed on a train that left the Harrisburg area and then changing in Pittsburgh, following which we were on our way to Keesler Field, Mississippi, via Cincinnati to Biloxi, Mississippi. The initial experience at Keesler Field was very unique for an 18-year-older, being involved with few other 18-year-olders, old people, versus mature young men that already were drafted to go into the military. From the camp in Pennsylvania, we left after indoctrination of being given uniforms, and our orders were from there all the way to Keesler Field by way of, if I said this before, forgive me, Cincinnati, to Biloxi, Mississippi, then on to Keesler Field for 13 weeks of basic training. However, being cadets, we were also given other examinations while at Keesler Field to determine what area we would be assigned, such as bombardier, navigator, or pilot. The desire to succeed and to prove to the power structure of the United States that as an intelligent black young man, I was capable of flying an airplane. I served in World War II for approximately 2 years. Actually, it was 1 year and 23 months. I was also in the Korean War after graduating from college, where I went to Langley Air Force Base in Virginia.
We're going to pick up with more of that in a little bit, and I'm really pleased to tell you that all of your footage that you got was actually prepared for airplay this morning. I thought we only had a couple minutes of it, but Janessa Schuller, our multimedia specialist here, did what needed to be done, which wasn't much, frankly. She just needed to subject it to a little signal processing here and there. Who did the editing? Or, well, tell me, yeah, let's hear about what you did. Everybody pointed at Rachel. You did it, huh?
I did all the editing on GarageBand, so it wasn't really that hard. And it was just kind of like, it was good to be the one who had to edit it, because then I kind of like got to listen to it again and got to learn more and take more from it.
It's something, it's so intimate when you, at least that's the word I use for it, when you listen to what a man like Dr. Higginbotham says, and you just hear it over and over and over, and you think, how can I honor him? What are the right words to choose? What are the right words to lose? And, you know, what would make him feel good? And he lives out in California now, I think, right? And
yes,
he came all the way here. Was it hard? How long was your original interview? What did you start with to get down to 10 minutes?
The original one was probably maybe around 20 minutes, and I had to cut it down to 10. And it was really funny, though, because a lot of the time he would, like, cover the microphone, and he'd be, like, talking to his son, wait, what's that called again? And it was really funny.
Well, that's good, because you help him sound his very best. And, you know, the same thing is done with me, you know, fortunately or unfortunately not here where it's all live. But if I were to record something, or any of us really, we all need that little bit of help. Nathan, did you do the interview or did everybody participate in that part?
During the interview, I was doing the main interview and asking questions, and I had Rachel taking some notes down, and then Amanda was taking pictures. So we all did our fair share of work.
That had to be great. Now, it sounded like there were an awful lot of people in the background and I actually liked the way that sounded, because it showed how many folks actually cared about what was going on. What was the mood like there that night?
It was all like, it was just really hustle and bustle, and like everybody was in a great mood. They were all happy to be there, seeing old friends that they used to see all the time.
That sounds terrific. We're going to continue in just a moment here. Saturday Light Brigade. Hey, thank you. Sorry, I began a sentence with hey. You know, I don't like to do that. But thank you for being here along with us. And today, you picked a great day to tune in. We decided to do something a little different this morning, and I hope you're enjoying it. We have Rachel and Amanda and Nathan from Cornell High School, and we're talking about the Tuskegee Airmen Memorial. They attended as youth reporters to cover that event, and we're going to hear more of their footage from Dr. Higginbotham in a few minutes. But we were talking off air a little bit about the Cuba Gooding Jr. movie Red Tails. I think it's plural, Red Tails. Nathan, you were mentioning some of the airmen had some comments about the film.
Actually, the guy that Cuba Gooding Jr. plays as, the real man, his wife was there.
Oh, neat.
And she was there, and everybody was, like, really excited about her being there. And we didn't get to talk to her, but it would have been really cool.
Oh, that's amazing to think of that. So in terms of talking to Mr. Higginbottom or Dr. Higginbottom, there's just so many things. Talking to somebody that age, talking to somebody who experienced so many things. I mean, at the age of 87, did he have any advice at all that he passed along to you, or did he feel compelled to make certain that you understood certain things that he wanted to be sure you didn't go away without hearing?
So there was a few things, but I think the one thing that spoke to me the most is he mentioned that the reason he wanted to be a Tuskegee Airman was to prove to America that a young African-American could fly a plane. And I think that that's really important, just that he defied basically the times, because you have like the Jim Crow laws and everything that kept like everything, the government very segregated and everything. And for him to go and do that was really amazing.
Anything to add at all? That's okay if nothing comes to mind. Let's let him speak for himself a little bit more and pick up with some of his narrative. And this is Dr. Higginbottom as we continue here at the Saturday Log Brigade.
In Virginia. The reason I was called back in the military for the Korean War was that I received a letter in the mail stating that I had to report to the military at such a date, which I did. And I informed the officer there that I did not know why I was being recalled, because I'd already put in my time. And he chuckled a little bit and said, I would like for you to read the papers that you had signed. And I read the papers, which stated that you had to complete your service of 24 months. And I was lacking 1 month. Therefore, I was obligated to continue my services based upon the contract that I'd signed. And at that time, it made me very aware of signing contracts. From there, I was taken via train from Pittsburgh. I reported to Langley Air Force Base in Newport News, Virginia, and assigned to the medical division because I was interested in medicine, and it was involved in possibly going to medical school. At Langley Air Force Base, I was assigned to the laboratory department doing various types of tests and vaccinations in charge of this unit of the soldiers coming in for active duty. It was a very interesting 2 years for me, in that I learned a lot, both involving the difficulties of being a medical doctor, which I aspired to be. A master sergeant there, who happened to be a black individual and also was the head of the unit, took a liking to me, and he showed me a lot of things, how to define different bloods of having certain diseases at that time. After a few months there, the commanding officer of the base called me in and said, "Lieutenant Higginbotham, you are now the supply officer of this hospital." And I said, "Sir, I decline, because I'm not qualified to be a supply officer." And he said to me, "Are you disobeying a direct order?" And I said, "No, sir. However, I would like the adjutant to come in and draw up a letter that I am signing an agreement that I feel that I'm not qualified for, and I have expressed that information to the commanding officer." Therefore, the adjutant drew up papers, and I signed it, and then continued to do my job. In doing my job, I had no idea how to take an inventory, and this was done by me and an enlisted individual, which resulted in the shortage of medical supplies that were on the record. I will not expose the method in which we did this. However, we reported to the commanding officer that there was a shortage in this report. Approximately 30 days later, a regular Air Force captain reported for duty and was the new supply officer.
Wow, it's you've captured him in a way that is just incredible. And it's so clear how proud he is of the service. And you I'm talking to are Rachel and Amanda and Nathan from Cornell High School, and they captured this interview. It's just a blessing to be able to get this because here you've got a man of vital link. Did he have any comments to say about whether in his mind Jim Crow, I mean the one of the goals of the Tuskegee Airmen was not only to defeat the tactical enemy abroad, but also to defeat Jim Crow at home. A lot of airmen have said quite clearly that that's what the what it was. Did he have any comments about the world today and whether he thinks we're there yet? And he may not have. It depends.
He didn't really, but I think it was more. You could just tell that he would like. He liked talking to us. Because it was like, you know, you had different people working together. And I think that was, like, it really was like a testament to what America has become. A very integrated part, like, in a very integrated society.
Was the attendance there pretty diverse, do you think?
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Now, there were also young children involved. I'm not sure if you were there for that part of it. Were you when the elementary school kids?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that, Amanda.
Well, the little kids, they played a lot of music when they were there, and I liked it all because they're like middle school kids playing for all these Tuskegee Airmen who are part of history, and like some of the kids probably don't even know who they are. So I mean, it was pretty cool.
That was great. And Rachel, anything? I saw your face really light up when I mentioned the elementary school kids.
I thought it was really cool because they played like. What was that called? The Tuskegee Airmen
March.
So I thought that was really cool how they like paid their tribute to the event and the men as a whole.
Yeah, it's just an amazing thing to watch. If you have any questions to these guys, I hope you'll consider calling of these students 412-586-6300. I want to kind of broaden things a little bit and just to ask each of you, you know, if you've given much thought career-wise. I know, Nathan, you're looking at Pitt now, but I'm not sure what you're hoping to study.
So I would like to study communications, but I'm still not sure what I want to do with that. Communications is so broad. With a communications degree, I can do just about anything. So I'm really just trying. That's like what I plan to do in college is not only get my degree, but figure out what I want to do when I grow up.
It's a good idea, and actually, you hear this from everybody you meet, but I've known Nathan for, I guess, almost a couple years, and you really have a very good head on your shoulders in terms of decision-making, in terms of many things, but, I mean, college is not really meant to be a vo-tech, you know, experience. You just have to learn how to think, and so you have tools that you can apply to just about anything. And you are both still, not still, but you're both sophomores now. But have you thought about life after high school yet?
I have. I've been looking into Robert Morris University for graphic design lately.
Excellent. Great school. That's Rachel, by the way. Why graphic design?
I like being really creative. Like, we're working on a project called This Day in Pittsburgh History, and they were like, oh, we need to design a logo for our thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to do that. Let me do that. So I just really like being creative and doing that kind of stuff on the computer. So
what are you going to do with the results of that, with this Day in Pittsburgh History project?
So it's like there is a segment that we use for our morning announcements called This Day in History, and it's by Russ Mitchell. And he goes through, and we have a new video every day, and it's him telling you what happened on that day in the past. So
oh, cool.
What our goal is to kind of try to do that, like we can make it and make it just about things that have happened in Pittsburgh and the greater Pittsburgh area.
Very cool. And he is he researching newspapers and going back? He must be, because there's so much to do. What a great idea to do that. What are you thinking of, Amanda?
I'm kind of thinking about what Nathan's doing, but I also want to get into photojournalism because I take a lot of pictures just around Pittsburgh, and I actually sent some pictures to Rachel for our This Day in Pittsburgh History, but of course they came out a little bit too small.
I'm not a very good picture taker at all. I really have a lot. In fact, when we were at boot camp together, and they are going to be covering this year's Pittsburgh Youth Media Reporters, the Remaking Cities Congress next week, I learned things about photography I never knew. This idea of eye line and how you want to sometimes be in the same sort of eye space as the person. I never had any idea about those sort of things. You guys have a lot of freedom at Cornell, and I'm not sure how that's come about, but it's pretty remarkable. Do you have a sense of how the culture there became what it is? Do you think it's due to the size of the district or the sort of relatively compact area that kids come from?
So I think it comes from a couple different. One, I think, is because we're such a small school. Our graduating class this year is 44 kids.
Wow.
So, yeah. So then we've all grown up with each other. I remember even before kindergarten, we played t-ball together. And it's just those kind of, like that, where you're, like, I've known you. It's like we just grew up together. So we're basically a family.
Yeah, 60. There's really, I'm sure there sometimes are pockets of cliques. I mean, that happens in all areas. And you've got a marching band. Wow. You must have a high percentage of participation among your kids, I would think, to field a marching band with, 240 students or so to call on from the whole school population. Yeah. Let's listen a little bit more to Dr. Higginbottom. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit to Nathan about his trip from this past summer, because Nathan was a global travel scholar with the World Affairs Council and had a chance to go to Africa. And we'll talk. Let's try to pick up here with the rest of what Dr. Higginbottom had to say. I think I'm roughly at the point where we stopped before. And let me be sure I've got him. Here we go.
Which resulted in the shortage of medical supplies.
So we're back on the inventory.
On the record. I will not expose the method in which we did this. However, we reported to the commanding officer that there was a shortage in this report. Approximately 30 days later, a regular Air Force captain reported for duty and was the new supply officer. He said, "Lieutenant Higginbotham, are you ready to take inventory?" I said, "No, sir, I know nothing about it." And he said, "Well, we're going to take inventory." It took us over 6 weeks to finish the inventory, which was short of different supplies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we reported to the commanding officer, who told us, "Well, we'd better come up with something better, not to expose any possibility of any liability at this time. I will not tell you the actual methods that we use to complete our inventory with a regular Air Force captain." However, there was a army base across the bay in Norfolk, and the newspapers were full of a officer that was disciplined and required to continue in the military for 2 years more and fine a fee for being short in the inventory that he had signed, which was public news at that time. And I sat in my barracks and thanked the Lord that that was not me. One other episode I will give you concerning the commanding officer of the base. Air Force desired to get a promotion from colonel to brigadier general, and he tried to recruit seven individuals in the same situation that I was in, that is college graduates who had desires and motivation to go on further with their education. And he attempted to influence us to join the regular military, which all seven of us resisted. We paid for this resistance in various ways of being assigned to different jobs that we did not feel that we were qualified to do. And after putting in another 2 years of my life, about 2 weeks before I was due to be discharged, the commanding officer called me in and told me that he was sending me overseas. And I said, "Sir, I'm sorry, but you're not." Therefore, he was upset again, and he called the adjutant in, and he asked the adjutant whether we could send Lieutenant Higginbotham overseas. And the adjutant said, "I don't think so, sir, because Lieutenant Higginbotham only has approximately 1 month to serve, and according to regulations, you must have a year before sending someone overseas. The law is a very good law because you waste a lot of talent and money to send someone overseas whom will be going back to the States after 1 year of service."
That was the voice of Dr. Higginbotham as captured by the team of Amanda McCaslin and Rachel Jorsty and Nathan Lawyer. And you guys did a good job. You know, I have always believed in taking risks, reasonable risks. And a risk I took was I only heard a very small portion of what you gathered, but I had a lot of confidence that it was going to be really well done. And so I was hearing a lot for the first time today. Just as our listeners, just as you might have been hearing this work for the first time, too. And you really did a good job of capturing the man and sharing him with everybody. And I think you all know how incredible that is. That'll be forever. Folks have now a record of Dr. Higginbotham. I want to turn to Nathan to talk about his trip, and then we'll just get some final thoughts from everybody. So, Nathan, you went to South Africa. Do tell.
So, I was selected of one of 18, I think, or 12 it was, out of 120 students selected to be Global Travel Scholars through the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh. I picked to go to South Africa, and that was probably the most life-changing experience of my life.
How so?
So, I guess first, it started out kind of a little shaky. My two biggest fears were, one, something happening to my luggage, and two, not getting to New York to meet my group. And my flight was supposed to leave New York at 6, and my flight from Pittsburgh to New York was delayed, so I didn't leave Pittsburgh till 6:30.
Oh, my. So you're already knowing that you're missing your connection. And this is a big deal. If you're just joining us, I mean, Nathan's a senior in high school, not in college, and 10th graders are Rachel and Amanda. And, you know, traveling on your own, although you're all mature, is new. There's a lot of security issues, and there's a lot of logistics here, because before you go to South Africa, you're meeting up with a group of global travel scholars in New York for a little orientation. So when you got to New York, was your plane there? Or
no, the group actually left the day before me. So when I finally got there, we ended up spending the night. We got to the airport and found out that my luggage was still in Pittsburgh. So that was both fears just right out of the...
Yeah, there you go. You got them out of the way on the first day.
And then going to... Then, like, we spent the night, and then I flew out the next day to Amsterdam and then to South Africa. So I was a day behind the group. So it was kind of... It was weird, but it was, like, I had all these fears going through my head, like, oh, no, they're not going to like me. They're all going to be friends. They're going to be, like, cliques, and I'm not going to get inside jokes. But then to finally get there, and everyone's, like, we went into the room. They had a classroom set up, and we went into the classroom, and they were in a circle, and I stood in the middle of the circle, and they got up, and they started dancing around me because they were so happy to see me.
Aw. Isn't it something how your imagination can create all of these fears? And, you know, I usually your imagine a person's imagination could create more fears than delightful things, you know. And just what you're saying, like, they're not gonna like me, they're gonna think I'm always the guy that's late, they're gonna think that you know, I'm dumb because I can't read a plane schedule. You know, you could come up with all these different things. So when did you get to South Africa?
So I was a day behind, so I got there on the 25th, I think it was, and to finally get there. So I landed in Joburg, and I ended up spending the night in Joburg, then flying to Cape Town. And that day that I missed, it was the only day it rained the whole trip. So it was kind of like everyone was happy to see me, and then towards the middle of the trip, it was like, the only day it rained was the day you weren't here. So I was kind of like, good luck.
You brought the sunshine. Yeah. What did you learn, and... What are your takeaways from that trip?
So, I'm not very good with foreign language. I took some French, I took some Spanish, and I'm just not good at those. But I guess, like, I know a little Afrikaans now because it's different. You learn it in a real-life setting, and it's not just in a classroom. And there's, like, practical applications. And during the trip, we stayed with families, and... Even though my family spoke English, they were still teaching me Afrikaans. And I still, like, remember, like, lekker slaap means have nice sleep. And that was just one of the really good things. Another thing was we did community service when we were in the homestay. And I actually taught kids how to use computers.
Oh, neat.
And two of our kids didn't speak any English. So we had to try and teach them without... teaching them, like, we had to kind of teach them, like, the letters so we could teach them how to use a keyboard.
How old were the kids?
They were between 5 and 10.
Wow, what a challenge. Yeah. To do that. They had computers already, or did you bring a computer?
There was a small computer lab where a guy would help the residents of the town, like, do their taxes and do their, like, different job resumes and things like that. So we taught them.
Now, will you keep in touch? You must miss your home family, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're all friends on Facebook. They always are sending me messages. Oh, we miss you, my baby. And aww. It's just like...
How was the food?
It was actually... So it wasn't completely different. A couple different things. They ate hot dogs for breakfast.
Huh.
And they like to cook out. So when we're like, oh, they're like, what do you eat when you cook out? And we're like, hot dogs. They're like, ew.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a breakfast food. That'd be like putting eggs on the grill here or something. Well, we have like 2 minutes, which is hardly enough time. But while the spotlight's on you, Nathan, your trip or really the time spent with Dr. Higginbotham, any reflections or anything you wanted to add?
So this was more just Tuskegee Airmen in general. There was one that we got a program for and they had a list of all the Tuskegee Airmen from our area. And there was one from Coriopolis, where we're from. And he was a police officer. His name was Charles White. Everybody called him Chick. But I remember meeting him for the first time, and he was the nicest man ever, and he actually died about 2 years ago.
Oh.
So that was, I didn't know he was a Tuskegee Airman at the time, so I found out late, but it was, just going back and just saying, oh, if I'd have known.
Is his family still there, do you know?
I think he had a daughter.
Oh, that gives me chills to think about that, and how he quietly carried that without really bragging or, you know, saying much about it. How about you, Rachel? Anything come to mind as we get ready to close?
Just reflecting and looking back on the experience, again, like just talking to these people who are living pieces of history, and it's just like, it's really neat. And how he said, going back to what Nathan pointed out earlier too, I did this to show, to like fight for my country and show the government that like a black intelligent person can fly a plane. It's just like, oh, you can do what you want. You don't, nobody can oppress you. You can, if you want to do it, you can do it. You just set your mind to it.
Great. And Amanda?
I think the best thing about this whole thing is that we actually got to learn more about history than what we're taught in history class. And it was pretty amazing. Like, you can listen to Dr. Higginbottom for hours on end just telling all of his stories that he told at the event. And I loved listening to him. He was amazing.
Thanks to each of you for being here. You've added to the body of history now. And, you know, sadly, you know, the next generation will probably not have a chance to hear Tuskegee Airmen directly as you did, but now they'll be able to hear indirectly. So Amanda McCaslin and Rachel Joristy and Nathan Lawyer, congratulations representing and how Cornell High School.